Good morning. We're discussing the work of the church and wrapping up that study this morning, hopefully. And we're talking about the church collectively, what the church has been commissioned to do. The things that we've discussed are not things that we choose to do on our own, but rather that which has been assigned by God for us to do. So we should have a concern for doing them, and doing them in the way that's been revealed in the New Testament. Last week we noted, when we were studying about the church's work of relieving needy saints, that when money is given on the first day of the week, that it is under apostolic control, that is, that it's under no longer our own decision-making as far as what we think might be good to do with the money, like we decide with our own money, but once it's been given, it ought to be used in the way that the apostles have specified. And so we made that distinction between money under our own control, Acts chapter 5 and verse 4, and then once it's been given. The three works that we've been discussing then are the church's work of evangelizing, that is, teaching and preaching the Word of God, edification, which is the building up of one another, building up of the saints, and then the relief of needy saints. It might be worthwhile just to talk for a moment about need. The Bible does not give a specific, as far as I know, a specific criteria for when it is a need. Hear me out on this. A need is not want. And there are some things that are said that I think help us to understand what is, help us judge what is need. And that would be when we saw in Acts chapter 11 and verses 27 through 30, the reason for which the churches in the church in Antioch took up a collection and sent it by the way of Paul and Barnabas to the elders of the churches of Judea was for a famine. And that was thus for the need of eating, for the need of feeding oneself, a necessity of life. In 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 8, in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 8, Paul, in speaking about godliness and contentment and avoiding the love of money, he says that we brought nothing into this world, there's nothing we can bring out. In verse 8, he said, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Verse 8, he said, and having food and raiment, or as some versions say, clothing, having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. The word there, and I think it's the King James Version uses raiment, the word has a meaning, what I've read, that includes clothing and habitation. In other words, clothing and shelter. And we think of those three basic needs of any human being, and that is to be fed, to be clothed, and to be sheltered from the elements. I think that helps us to understand the idea of need as opposed to what someone wants. That is, they can't pay their cable bill anymore. Or may I say, they can't run the air conditioner as much as they wanted to. I'm not trying to nitpick. I'm just suggesting that we have to understand and decide what is a need. And the idea that the church helps needy saints is not just that, you know, well, this month I couldn't pay the cable bill and I couldn't, and so we want money from one another to do that. That's not the idea given in the scriptures. So we would want to be interested in making the right judgments about need. That's all I'm trying to say. And I think the Bible gives us some ideas. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, Paul said, if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he's denying the faith and is worse than an infidel or an unbeliever. And then he talks about how a widow who has no one to provide for her could be taken into the role of the church. Here's the point I want to make. the idea of providing for his own. What is that? Well, if you have children, you know what providing for your own means. It doesn't mean providing them all the toys they ever asked for or providing everything they ever wanted, right? And so we have to think about that when we think about need. Any thoughts or comments on that? Yes, Troy?
Well, just, you think about shelter. So many people are like, well, I can't live in anything that's less than a three-bedroom, two-bath house. Well, no, if you're in need, you can handle a room, the very bare necessity room.
Right. That's
not,
right.
We're not going to support you to live in this mansion, but we will support you to live in this small condo apartment type thing.
That's right. Okay. Good point, John.
I was thinking about the widows, talking about the work of the church. And in this country, it seems like it's hard to even find a true widow. I mean, with Social Security and Medicaid, and then you have, retirements. And there's just so much that supplies that they didn't have in the Bible times for the women. I'm not saying there's not a widow out there that does need some help from the church, but I just think it'd be hard for us to find right now.
It is more difficult. I would agree. And we live in a country that, at present, has a social security net or help that's provided. It doesn't disregard our desire and using our ability to help others when we can individually. But you're right, finding those like we're reading about in the New Testament. However, if we leave this country, we do find that kind of thing. And that's why I often say, we're very rich people here. We're just very well to do. Did you have a comment?
Yeah, the other thing that isn't mentioned here that I believe is a need and can be a very expensive need is medications.
That's another one. I had written that one down too. When you think about the necessities or someone being fed or clothed or sheltered, it seems that would be included in that kind of thing. Someone who is reliant upon medicines for their health. Yes?
And the Bible also specifies that she's not less than 60 years old, because in this world, we can work. Mm-hmm. We couldn't make it without both of us working. The person has to help themselves also.
That's right. And so in this context of 1 Timothy 5, there's several qualifications she would need to meet to be enrolled. And I understand that to be for a continuous support, as opposed to, let's say, a widow or any other member of the congregation is truly in need, and it's not an ongoing need, because the person can provide for themselves, but they have ended up in some kind of destitute situation that could be provided for. In other words, the help that was provided in Jerusalem, the help that went to Jerusalem needy saints later in the story in Acts, that wasn't just widows; that was individuals in need. And but here, I think Paul's talking about enrolling a widow. In fact, in Acts 6, remember, the Grecian widows were neglected in the daily distribution. It would seem then that that's kind of like an enrolled, an ongoing thing they were doing for Grecian widows there, who obviously would have need to met some criteria and were in constant need. Okay, so I just wanted to mention that. Now, in every case we've seen so far, let me put them up here on the board. We have Acts chapter 2. Remember, just right after they obeyed the gospel, the text tells us about how that they were helping one another and putting into a common fund. In Acts chapter 4, we read about it again. And we noted in Acts chapter 4 and about verse 34, nor was there any among them who lacked. Talking about the saints in Jerusalem. And then we went on to Acts chapter 6. And in Acts 6, there were Grecian widows who were being neglected in the daily distribution. And the church was told to choose out 7 men to oversee that work. In Acts chapter 11, then we saw another case where a prophet came down from Jerusalem telling of a famine, and the saints in Antioch sent relief by the hands of Barnabas and Saul to the elders in Judea, in the churches of Judea. Then in Romans chapter 15, Paul, much later, is talking about the collection he's taking up as he's going on his third journey to take back to Jerusalem to needy saints. In 1 Corinthians 16, and verses 1 and following, 2 and 3, Paul there talked about, we can read that briefly, but he said, now concerning the collection for the saints. Okay. Now 2 Corinthians 8, last week we looked at, and then we looked at 2 Corinthians 9, speaking of all of these, speaking of the same collection that Paul is collecting on the third journey. In every case, let me just draw it like a table here. I'm going to do this. And let's say, was this being collected for non-saints? And I'll just abbreviate it that way. Or was it being collected for saints? And so let's go. Acts chapter 2. Who was that for? It was for saints. Acts chapter 4. Among them, saints. Acts 6. The Grecian widows among saints. Acts 11, the saints. Romans 15, Paul picking up funds, taking them back to Jerusalem for the needy saints. 1 Corinthians 16, 1, collection for the saints. 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, speaking of the same collection, collection for the saints in Jerusalem. There is not a scripture in the New Testament that shows or suggest necessarily infers, or is a command, example, or necessary inference of the church collectively providing for those who are not saints. It just cannot be found. We don't have the right, even when we are concerned about the needy, to make it a work of the church to help the needy of the world. However, we want to discuss our in this lesson briefly, our responsibility as Christians and as children of God to have compassion upon the suffering and the needs of the world. But collectively, the church did not use its money and its funds to do that. I want to do one more here. In every case where needy saints were being, a collection was taken for them, did Paul have them, or did Paul have them, or did Luke record in Acts that some kind of organization was set up to do this? Or was it the church? Or, I'll just say, was there some kind of organization? He says, let me just pretend here for a moment. And Paul says, now concerning the collection for the needy saints, we've set up a group with a board of directors. They'll be coming through to pick up the money. And I've instructed the other churches to turn their money over to this organization. And they will see that the money is brought to Jerusalem. And trust me, they'll see, I'm being facetious, but trust me, they'll see that it ends up where it's supposed to be. You will not find that in any of these cases. Now, the problem is not that they were cavemen, because they weren't cavemen. They were just as civilized as you and me. And they might be more civilized than we are today. But anyway, they were a civilization. They could well set up an organization. But in every case, the church is the one who took up the collection, and the church is the one that made sure and sent, chose messengers and sent it by the hands of messengers, people they trusted and appointed. Things were done honorably in the sight of all men, so that that money would end up back into the hands of the needy, the congregation where the needy saints were. So in every case we have the church involved. The church is the one who sent the funds and received the funds, and not some organization. But I'll go a step further, and I'm out of room, but I'll just abbreviate it SC, sponsoring church. In any of these cases, did Paul either command or even suggest or necessarily infer that the church should send all their funds to another church so that that church could then determine how to distribute it out to other churches? And that would be a sponsoring church who collects all these funds from other churches, and then they oversee this work of getting it to this church or that church. In none of those cases will you find that. Now, having said all of that, what do we find in the religious world today? And what do we find among brethren who are leaving the faith? We find them collecting money and providing for people who are not saints. We find them creating organizations, benevolent organizations, let's say some children's home run by some board of directors that says, send us your orphans from your congregation and we'll look after them. And the church will send the money to that orphan's home, and the orphan's home will take care of all these orphans from all over the place, saint or not. We see that happening, and then we see this idea of a sponsoring church that oversees a work and says, well, this particular orphan's home is our work. Churches, send me your money. Send us your money, and we will see that this money gets used in this way. The New Testament plan is very simple. The church sending money when there's a church in need, can't relieve its own needy saints, a church sending money directly to that church. This gets into the question of whether God's plan is sufficient. And God's plan transcends generations and people and cultures, and His plan does. And to step outside of this plan is to step outside the authority of Christ. And churches have done that. And in doing so, they've not just gone there, they've gone beyond. Because once you leave the authority of Christ, then you're not operating by His authority. Now, what's the authority? It's man's authority. What we think, what we surmise is best, what we can try to reason is best. God's plan when the church collectively helped needy saints was that it's helping needy saints and it's doing its work of doing that. That does not mean that if we have a needy saint here who's destitute and needs medical care, that we cannot, that they cannot receive help from a hospital. But we can help pay that bill for that destitute person. Okay, so they're receiving help from an organization, but we're not creating any organization. We're paying for the, it's kind of like someone who can't afford the a widow who's destitute, and so we pay for her apartment bill. The money ends up in the hands of someone who owns an apartment, but that doesn't mean we're in the apartment business. Does anyone have any thoughts or comments on that? This has became a problem years ago. It's still a problem because if you look at those churches, they've gone into further error. But the pressures of helping non-saints, you can just hear someone say, you mean you don't care about the needy of the world? And to that we should say, the church has no responsibility given by Christ to do that. We as individuals do have care. And we ought to. We'll talk about that in a moment. Yes?
Well, the church is, the way God set it up, is we're a family. made friends of God's children. We're supposed to know each other and help each other. And each individual church is that little family community.
Yes.
So we know our needs. It wasn't set up for the world. It was set up for this group of people that are trying to do what God tells them.
That's right, and nothing precludes if you have a need from one of us individually helping you with that need. Okay. Yeah.
You know, there was quote unquote emergency situation here that Paul is trying to deal with, and that's why he asked him to have the money prepared for him when he gets there. You know, not to try and raise it after he gets there, to have it ready so he could move on to go help these people who are in real need.
Yeah, this was not a quote created need. When someone's in need, they're in need, and time is important, isn't it? To get them. And, you know, Paul, to what you said, Paul told them, he said, upon the first day of every week, and that's in the text. The New King James and King James doesn't translate it every, but if you go back to the American Standard and New American Standard, and I forget the Greek word, but anyway, the idea of making a collection every week, just like you said, so that when I come, there'll be no collections. We're not going to get into the... And here's the thing about that. Some people say, well, there's no such thing as a church having some funds collected up. Well, they need to be collected for a purpose and they need to be used. But yes, they can be collected and they can be put aside for the purpose for which they've been collected. And that's exactly what the church in Corinth was told to do. Put it aside, collect it up, and when I come, the collection will be taken. Did you have a comment?
I want to throw this out here. Let's say we have someone that's down on their luck here, a member. Shouldn't we exhaust first, before we go to the church funds, individually help that person before we dip into that to help? Isn't our responsibility, you know, Charlie and I and John, we can help before?
That would be my understanding, that individually we can help one another
and not
burden the church with that. It's kind of like the widow who has believing children. Let them relieve her. Don't let the church be... In fact, I think he uses that word, doesn't he? Don't let the church not be burdened. So that's a good...
I've seen...
principle.
Churches of Christ before dive into the funds of the church before anybody even stepped up.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be that way.
And yet those there have the ability to help. And like Denise, I think it was, said, we're family, we're in tune with each other to know that. We're not ashamed to ask or to tell either. We're not ashamed to share
how,
that.
I showed you, how in tune are we?
Yeah.
Are we paying attention? Mm-hmm. As a family, you pay attention.
Yes.
<No?
coughs> Thank you, Chris. Anything else? I want us to think about individually. First of all, I want to say something about this point. The church did not collect funds for benevolence, for relief of non-saints. We've established that, but I put this scripture, but I really should put all eight here. Okay. Now, helping needy saints is not a means to propagate the gospel. That means that the church is not trying to do this to try to attract people to become Christians. And I think there's something to be said about that. There, some churches that have left the faith, they're involved in something called medical missions. And so what they do is they spend their church funds, that which was collected, to pay for doctors and to pay for programs in other countries, medical programs, and that is a what they would say a door in order to be able to now teach someone the gospel. They have now added an activity that the Lord did not authorize for the church to do. If I want to be individually a doctor or a school teacher, and I have an opportunity to teach someone that way, then that's great. But the church has no business going into schooling. You can go down the line. Schooling, medically providing, and of course this is done for nonsense too anyway. But it's used to attract people to the gospel. I ask this rhetorically, do we not learn anything from what happened with Jesus when he fed the 5,000? And he says, and Jesus could look into a man and know what was in him, John chapter 2. He said, you follow me for the loaves. You follow me for the food, I'm paraphrasing, but in John chapter 6. In John 6. And he says, verse 26. Most assuredly I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. And so he says, don't labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him. And then the rest of this discourse, he says, you must eat my flesh and drink my blood. Not referring to the Lord's Supper, but he says, you must take all of my food spiritually. And what happened? Many of his disciples walked with him no more. Verse 66. From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. It was a great turning point in Jesus' ministry. So we learn that if you attract people with food, then they are, so to speak, converted to food. But I want us to think about this last point now. Christians individually have a work to do in this, and their benevolence extends beyond saints. Jesus teaches us, and the apostles do, and the prophets teach us to be good-hearted and generous with others. For example, now 1 John 3:17 is speaking of saints, but let's read it. 1 John 3:17. Whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? Hey, this is not the church operating, and this gets back to Chris's point. This would never reach the church, because the one who has plenty would give to the one who has need, because he's aware of his need and he has what his brother needs. Galatians 6 and verse 10. Paul speaking to churches of Galatia, but yet in this context, in many of the times when he's writing to the church, he's not telling everything he writes to a church is not what the church is doing collectively. For example, in Ephesians 5, he says, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church. Is that church action? That's individual action. Let's look in Galatians 6 and verse 10. He says, therefore, if we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. This is in the context of up here where he said in verse 6, let him who has taught the word share with him, or share in all good things with him who teaches. And he goes on and talks about sowing and reaping, but he says, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those of the household of faith. I believe the all extends beyond the household of faith to non-saints. We as individuals have a responsibility to do good as we have opportunity to all men. James 1:27, pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction or in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. In the past, and maybe even presently, some people will argue that this gives the right for the church to help any needy, not just needy saints. But it's clear in verse 27 that James is talking about individual action. And to keep oneself unspotted from the world. That's your responsibility and mine. And it's your responsibility and mine when we have opportunity to do good to others and to visit. And that's not the idea of drop in to say hi. That word there has to do with help with their needs. To visit orphans and widows in their trouble. In other words, if we ever think that being a Christian is just about hitting some checklist of what we do on Sunday, then we've missed the boat. Because Christians are good to other people and giving and generous. And that's a big part of what we are and supposed to be. Matthew 25, verses 31 through 46. This is the pair of... let's turn there. Matthew 25, 31 through 46. Where Jesus is describing the judgment scene and the separation of the sheep and the goats. He says to those who are invited in to enter into heaven, he says in verse 36 of 35, "I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the king will answer and say, "Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me." Here, Jesus is talking about, I believe, his brethren, his people. And so, perhaps in this context and in this story, it's more about us with our brethren in Christ. But Jesus is teaching, and the apostles have been teaching us to be good unto all men. Luke 10, 25 through 37 is the parable of the Good Samaritan. Jesus is teaching us to go and do likewise, like that Samaritan. And that's not just a saint. Sometimes we have decisions to make about these kind of things. For example, one comes to us into this building because they know we're here, and they come in and they're asking for money and asking for help. They're not a member of the church here. We do not, according to the scriptures, then take our collection and provide them with help. However, we as individuals can speak with such a person and determine their need. But we should take some things into account. For example, Paul said in 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10, "If any will not work, neither should he eat." If someone comes in here, an alcohol or drug addict, can we just hand them some money? I'm talking about individually. Is that something... Now, it's in your own control to do, okay? Let's get that straight. But I'm just talking about us making wise choices about who to help and how, individually. we have to think about those kind of things. Yes, Troy?
The other thing I would have issue with or trouble with is, say you normally put $20 in the plate, but there's somebody out there with a need help sign, so this month I'm only going to put 10 and I'm going to give them the other 10.
Uh-huh.
You know, to me that's taking the church's money and giving it for another reason. You go ahead and you make your normal donation, and then what you give them is extra.
So giving as you've been prospered on the first day of the week is the instruction, and also, yeah, I think we have to consider stuff like that. Obviously, it's not something that we decide collectively, but you've got to look at that yourself and come. Yes.
Another thing is, when we were in Lodi, the church building itself was in the lower part of Lodi. So we would get people wandering in, asking for money. And the men would, one of the first things the men would ask is, do you belong to a congregation? Do you have a church that you go to? And why aren't you asking them for funds?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's scriptural.
Yes.
And it's like, do you plan on worshiping with us? Why are you here? Are you just
that's
here
right.
for a handout? Or are you here for the spiritual food?
That's right.
Questions
Good
need
point.
To be asked.
Yes.
Right.
You just don't give it straight over. You've got to ask a few things.
Yeah, in fact, one preacher said that they have a form and they'll hand the person a, not so that the church can help them, but just so individuals can help them. And by the time they get done filling out that form, they really don't want to be around anymore sometimes. We have a challenge to not be hardened by all of the deceit that does occur and still maintain the softness of heart and generosity that we need to have, and yet at the same time not contribute to one's delinquency and all of that. And I'm glad that the Lord gives us some instruction and wisdom so that we, within our own control, can try to please Him in how we handle that. So I want us to go to this next slide here and maybe before we do this, I want us to think about the pattern here of when we looked at relief of needy saints. We had a church, I'll abbreviate with a C, helping its own members, the church caring for its own among them. We had cases where the church, like in Antioch, sent to the churches of Judea where there was a famine so that these churches could relieve their own. And I'll just write that. And then we had cases, a case where later, can everybody see that? We had several churches, the churches of Galatia, I've given orders to, the churches of churches in Macedonia, the church in Corinth. They're all sending money to a church so that it, and that one in Jerusalem, so that it can relieve its own needy saints. This is what we saw. We didn't see, and I made the point over there, we didn't see this where they all sent to a church so that church could send to some other churches. You don't see that. You don't see them sending to some, I'll just put O for organization, so that organization can now distribute it out. This just doesn't go on. And again, we must ask ourselves, will we stick to the pattern? Do we trust the New Testament pattern that it is sufficient in any day and age? And that gets back to, we trust the scriptures that it's sufficient in any day and age. So we saw this in the matter of relieving needy saints. In the matter of evangelism, We saw a church sending a man like Barnabas so he could preach or teach there in Antioch. And he did. He came from Jerusalem, and the brethren here, the church determined to send. Acts chapter 11. We have the church in Philippi sending money to Paul. So this is, I think this is could be misleading the way I drew that. This makes it look like a church is sending, could be sending funds to the church in Antioch. The church is sending Barnabas. That's all I'm saying, okay? This church is sending Barnabas so Barnabas can go do a work here. The church, Paul says to the Corinthians, I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service. So while Paul was in Corinth, he was receiving aid from other churches. So we have, in the matter of teaching and preaching the gospel, we have funds being sent from Philippi to Paul, from multiple churches to Paul when he's in Corinth. You do not find a church sending funds to another church or churches. We can't find this. This is not in the pattern. There's a different pattern. There's a different thing going on here in evangelism than there is in relieving of needy saints. And we need to remember that. There's also another point to make. We will not find ever a church sending money to another church so that they can edify themselves. So this church here says, well, you know what? We need some money so that we can build a building so we can meet in. Oh, so this church will send them some money. You just can't find that. You won't find this church sending to a church money so that this church can say, well, we need to buy some class materials and we can't afford class materials. So this church will send to this church. We don't find that. In a matter of edification, you will not find a church sending to another church. Let's chew on that. It's not in there. Any thoughts before we go on?
So just say that the group in Bellingham knows that we're over here and we can't seem to get the rent money for a building we're renting that we're in. We don't have enough. They can send that some money to you individually?
Well, what would be the example of doing that, even, of a church sending to me? If they're sending to me to preach the gospel, then it would be for me to preach the gospel, not to, you know, rent a building. Does a church need a building? Church doesn't need a building. Does a church need class materials? Is that a necessity? They need the Word of God. They need the Bible. Do they need air conditioning in their building? No. When we think of the matter of edification that comes through the preaching and the teaching of the Word of God, we've got that. But go ahead.
Well, when the church in Paradise caught on fire and was burnt to the ground, you know, they lost many Bibles, songbooks, and etc. You know, the building went down. And so we talked to them, and one of the things they asked for was songbooks. So we sent them money to buy songbooks. Mm-hmm. Once we sent them the money, you know, it was their discretion on how they spent it. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't want to send them, you know, 5 extra songbooks we had, because it'd be too hard to match up songbooks that way. Mm-hmm. It was just easier to send them their money or some money to help them get back on their feet for Bibles, songbooks, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I would say I don't know where the authority would be for doing that, but to...
It was a church of Christ that was in need, and we had extra money.
Yeah.
So we sent two brethren to help them out.
Mm-hmm. Well, the needs, you know, in the needs of, in a matter of benevolence was individuals who were in need of the necessities of life.
Well, so much, I mean, pretty much this whole town, houses and everything,
yeah,
fell to the ground. I
mm-hmm.
mean, there were Christians in need in many different ways.
Yes.
Trying to figure out where what you're saying would be wrong. They were wiped out.
They were wiped out.
You had to get together and send it. Why would that be wrong?
Wouldn't that be back to the individual could help all they wanted in
yeah.
the situation, but the church itself is not, I mean, the ones examples that you gave, that would not be an example of one of the examples that we have in the new scriptures of what the church can do, but individuals definitely not only could, but should help those kind of individuals that are in need.
It does get back to that, yes.
I mean, we can work on emotions and we can say, oh, they need something, and we can work on emotions like a lot of the congregations do or
mm-hmm.
denominations do, and it's a good work. It sounds like a good work, but is it scriptural? It doesn't appear to be, you know, with the examples that are given. But as individuals, like I said, yes, you not only could, but should help, you know, people in need like that.
So if the church sends something on a situation like that, you're saying that there's no example of that in the
scriptures? There's no example of that. There's... The only examples of churches sending to another church is to relieve needy saints in that place. That is something that church there is responsible for doing, but obviously they cannot do it. So the church, these other churches are assisting, and they're sending it to that church so that church can take care of its needy saints. But we just don't find any other examples of churches sending to another church.
How is that not needy saints? When your town burns down, your building burns down, you have saints that have lost everything in their home. They have mm-hmm. no clothing. They have nothing but what they were able to make it out of the house with. To me, these are needy saints.
And individuals can help those needy saints, and the church there can help its needy saints, but if that church cannot help its needy saints, it's beyond their ability, then other churches can send to that church to help
that's what we did.
Their needy,
we
needy saints.
We sent them money to help their needy saints.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make a distinction between what is need as far as individuals regarding things like, you know, food, clothing, raiment, shelter, that kind of thing, versus what the church, you know, it's kind of like saying, well, the church couldn't pay its preacher, so because they lost so much, so now we're going to send, this church is going to send to that church so that church can now pay the preacher who's there. But now, when you do that, you're starting to get into an area that is not in the pattern where a church is sending. The church was sending to another church. The case of that in the New Testament was when that church could not relieve its own needy saints. As far as its building and its materials and all of that is concerned, that's that church's business to do what it needs to do in that regard. In actuality, it's kind of like I was in the Philippines and I came back and people were writing to me and said, well, can you send us some money so we can buy some trays for the Lord's Supper? And Now, individually, I believe I could have individually sent to a brother in Christ, and if he wants to go buy trays for the church, that's fine, and give them. But it occurred to me, okay, you all eat and you all drink, or you're not living. So if you eat and you drink, if you drink, you have something to drink out of, and if you eat, you have something with which to make the food. A gold-colored or silver-colored tray is not a necessity for you to eat and drink the Lord's Supper. If you really are so destitute that you don't have that, then you don't have the necessities of life to eat or drink daily. So I say that to distinguish between what is an individual's need versus what the church, as far as its work of edification, that is done through what? The Word of God. And I know that we sing when we come together, but singing does not require a song book. Singing does not require a pitch pipe. It does not require a PA system. It does. None of these things are we can only do what we can do as a church. I try to think about that. If this church is not able to afford a building and a place to meet, we will find a way to edify ourselves in another location. And that's not the kind of need that we see being relieved when a church sent to another church. I want you to think about that. That's all I ask you to do. Churches don't respect this at all. So those churches will send to other churches. If we can send to another church for a purpose for which we cannot find in the Scriptures, then we can send to that church for any purpose. It's kind of like if a man can divorce his wife without any cause in that, or for this cause, which is not fornication, and it's okay, then I guarantee you that in someone else's mind, this reason is just as good as that reason. The fact is, there's only one reason given. And so we get back to sticking to that which is revealed. Did someone have a comment or guide?
Well, I was just going to say something to the effect of how we have to be really, really careful. I mean, it appears as a need. It would be a good work. It's something that they need. They have. It seems like it would be okay. That's, I mean, all of those, we just have to be really careful with it. Mm-hmm. It's, and it kind of goes back to my mom, and you've studied with her and stuff like that, and she says that you need to do what's in the Scriptures, right? I mean, she mm-hmm. said that over and over and over again. But when it comes down to the Catholic Church, she feels like it's okay. Mm-hmm. She can partake of the Lord's Supper on a Wednesday afternoon because she's old and can't get out of the house, and the Lord thinks that that would be okay for her to do. I don't know, maybe that's an extreme, but it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, she is old and she can't get out of the house, and it's okay for her to do it on a Wednesday.
Right.
Well, is it or isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the world would say, yeah, that's okay. That's a good word.
Mm-hmm.
It fulfills her need and her being comfortable and serving God. But is it scriptural? Is
right.
It right? And you have to come down and say, no, Mom, it's not. And then that can create tension and hard feelings, and but we have to do what God says.
All right.
Sometimes those decisions are not easy, and they're not really what we think maybe they should be. I don't know.
Good comment. Yes, thank you.
You know,
Troy.
We all might know a song or two without songbooks. Do we need a songbook with 800 pages in it, 800 songs in it? No. But to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Orderly and decent, we all need to be singing the same song.
That's right.
So, if without a songbook or without the words in front of me, there's like one song, maybe two, that I can sing without the words. The rest of them, A, I'm either not going to be able to sing, or I'm going to be singing the words after you guys sing them, and it's not going to sound like I'm in step with you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to stay decent and orderly, we do need some materials to do so.
Yeah, songbooks are certainly good aid for our worship. And I've been places where they did not sing with a book, but they probably sang a very few select songs in Africa, for one. And but we're used to that kind of aid. It's just a matter of, can a church send to another church to do that kind of thing? Or is that's that church's business to take care of that and determine what they need to do in that regard? And that's a different thing than one who is in need of the necessities of life. Are there any other comments?
Right.
Yes, Denise.
God set the parameters on what He wanted us to do and not do.
Yes.
So, you know, I think of that verse that talks about the pottery telling the potter what they want. We don't have that latitude. God set the parameters, and if we want to please Him, we have to stay within His set parameters. It doesn't mean we need to agree or always understand.
That's a very good point, Denise. Yeah. John, did you have something?
I just back to what I said before, was individuals easily could send songbooks to a congregation like that. I mean, there's with this country, the way people make money. I mean, even if the church shouldn't or can't, according to scriptures, do it, individuals could easily send 25 books to a congregation. They could share books, even if they had 50 people in there, send 25 books, and they wouldn't break someone of their funds for the month. So, I mean, individually, I still think that there's lots of things we could do out there that individually probably don't do,
that we
probably
don't
should
do
more.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll close there and pick up next week then.